Hello. This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 5th of June, 2015. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Bill Argles and Irene Dowding. And your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are City Hit by Fire Cuts, Hope for Radio to Assist OAPs, and Silver Hill Will Start This Year. So, can we have the story behind the first headline, please, Shirley?
City hit by fire cuts. Multi-million pound cuts to Hampshire's fire brigade will hit Winchester hardest, a senior source has warned. Fire chiefs have denied claims that they are considering a tax hike to help meet a £5 million shortfall, which could see Winchester Fire Station's budget slashed by nearly 40%. Winchester firefighters moved from North Walls to a new base in Eastern Lane, Winnall, in 2011. Fire chiefs said at the time that the new base, close to the M3 and housing 70 staff, would allow it to provide faster emergency cover. The source added that Hampshire Fire and Rescue Authority is considering raising the council tax precept to help meet its shortfall. But Councillor Keith Chapman, Vice Chairman, said, "We have had no decisions or started those discussions. As far as members are concerned, we've not discussed raising precept next year." Proposals seen by this newspaper, which are out for consultation with firefighters, say 14 full-time job cuts will help save £518,000 from Winchester's budget of £1.3 million. As previously reported, the changes could see more than 100 frontline job losses across Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service, raising fears for overnight cover in Winchester. Concerns have also been raised for vulnerable historic buildings like Winchester Cathedral. An experienced firefighter with links to senior management said the city will see emergency response times increase by up to 5 minutes at night if part-time staff cannot be retained in numbers. He told the Chronicle, "I think Winchester's getting the worst deal in the whole county, I really do. Being very central to the whole geography of Hampshire, flinging all that money on that fire station down there and then having the financial cuts, leaving it understaffed at night, I think is diabolical. The people of Winchester are looking at nighttime response, probably taking 4 or 5 minutes longer." He added, "If I was retained there and my employer, my wife and my family are happy for me to turn out there, that's all well and good. It only takes a family breakup or your employer needing to tighten his belt and he can no longer release you to respond to fire emergencies. If no one comes forward to do those duties, how are we going to cover them?"
Hope for Radio to Assist OAPs. A new Winchester radio station is being planned in an effort to engage older people with the community and reduce social isolation. Winchester Hospital Radio is preparing a city-wide launch on FM frequency to help keep over 50s healthy, active and away from the wards. Content would include music, news and features from local charities, healthcare providers and community groups. It would be the city's first radio station since Wynn FM, which aired from the Brooks Centre between 1999 and 2007. Anna O'Brien, chairman of Winchester Hospital Radio, is one of four trustees leading the project. She said live broadcasts would allow presenters to engage with the day's events and encourage the elderly to get out of the house and foster community spirit. Areas in the city of Winchester have a larger than normal number of people who are older, and there's a real need to connect people with their communities, she said. It's for Winchester, from Winchester, by Winchester, which we don't have at the moment. The hospital would be at the heart of the community. The station would continue to broadcast from Royal Hampshire County Hospital and provide tailored content for patients, but Winchester Hospital Radio would merge with the new Winchester Radio charity. The aim has always been to provide a warm, friendly and very local broadcasting service, meeting our listeners, keeping them informed of hospital activities and upcoming community events happening on our doorstep, Ms. O'Brien added. Winchester Radio will build on the heritage of the hospital radio and provide a service that emphasises the strong, caring sense of community, togetherness and belonging in this great city we all call home. It would air within a 5-mile radius from its base at the RHCH, covering villages such as Compton, Shawford, Littleton, Hairstock, Badger Farm, Kingsworthy and Colden Common, but not extending to Wolsford or Bishop's Waltham. Winchester Radio is applying to broadcaster regulator Ofcom for an FM community radio licence later this year. If successful, the station is expected to be on the airways by 2017, although Ofcom have no fixed target in responding to applications. A fundraising target has yet to be set, as the station's business plan is still in development, but trustees are confident their decades of experience in hospital radio will work in their favour.
And now Silver Hill will start this year. Construction of the £150 million Silver Hill scheme is set to start by the end of the year, according to its developer. TH Real Estate, formerly known as Henderson, has confirmed its redevelopment in Winchester City Centre could be underway within months if civic chiefs accept that it is financially viable. The City Council is legally obliged to decide whether the firm, which altered its name on Monday following a takeover deal, will make enough money on the project of shops and homes. But the parties disagree over what evidence has been submitted, according to the Council leader, Stephen Godfrey. We have indicated to our partners that their submissions needed further clarification, he told the Chronicle on Monday. Asked about the changing viability of its revived proposals, a TH Real Estate spokesman said, "Viability changes with market conditions, and the fact that the 2009 scheme has significantly more residential than the 2014 scheme means that it has been particularly sensitive to such movement. Once the council has information it needs, officers have 15 working days to approve or reject Henderson's figures. If they are granted, along with details on funding and housing partners, the scheme will go unconditional, removing the final block on construction. We would expect to be on site in some shape or form by the end of the year," a TH Real Estate spokesman said. Asked whether the developer could apply for changes after the 2009 scheme has gone ahead, she added, "We will always look to refine and improve a scheme during the process of its detailed design where the opportunity arises. These would always be within what is lawfully entitled and permitted under the provisions of the agreement." Monday marked the expiry of a long-stop agreement between the parties, meaning either can walk away provided they have fulfilled their side of the bargain. As reported in last week's Chronicle, Cabinet rejected the chance to extend this agreement after what it called an offer from the developer. The TH Real Estate spokesman added, "It was the Council who requested whether we would agree to it, as they wished to delay their decision to approve our request to go unconditional under the development agreement until after the Claire Lloyd-Jones report. In the end, they decided not to, which we are pleased with, as it allows us to move on without further delay."
That concludes the headlines. Now we have the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Bishop, David Broughton Gibson Bishop, aged 82, after a long battle with ill health. Card, Sylvia Card, peacefully aged 84. Cooper, Anne Cooper, peacefully aged 76. Dory, John Henry Dory, peacefully at Old Raven House, Hook, aged 90. Foot, Robert Arthur Foot, peacefully aged 92. Galpin, Dennis William Galpin. Hyde, Florence Hyde, aged 92. Pittman, Betty Doreen Pittman, aged 84. Waite, Roger Waite, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 80. Webster, Ray Webster, aged 71, after a short illness. Westbrook, Michael Hereward Westbrook, peacefully, aged 88. And Young, Shirley Young, in Winchester Hospital, aged 76. Christian comment this week is read by Shirley. Thank you, Shirley.
And it's headed Dying Matters. And it's written by Rosemary A. Baker. Yesterday, I went to have my pre-assessment for my forthcoming knee operation. Arriving early to get a parking space, I went for a cup of coffee. On the table, as I went in, was a large poster saying, Dying Matters, and lots of leaflets. This wasn't uppermost in my mind, as I had thought my condition wasn't serious, but took some time to read whilst waiting. The essence of the promotion was that we don't talk about death enough, and we should plan for it and make our wishes known to our loved ones about our funeral wishes and disposal. This display may be a response to the recent report by the Parliamentary and Health Service Ombudsman that found that patients are being let down in their end-of-life care, or it may just be routine good practice. The report highlighted tragic cases where people's suffering could have been avoided or lessened with the right care and treatment as they approached the end of their lives. The report highlighted as well that families often lost the chance to say goodbye to their loved ones because of poor communication and planning. This is something we tend to set great store by. Hence, in obituary notices, it often says, with their family by their side. We are often sad to hear that people died alone, like poor Charles Kennedy, the former Liberal Democrat leader, who died earlier this week. Recent medical advances mean that life can often be prolonged with new cancer treatments as well as surgical techniques, so we have a relatively new phenomenon, learning to live with a more definite knowledge of when we might die. We have, as a consequence, more time to think about and plan our deaths, as some of the helpful leaflets pointed out. Also, as the report pointed out, we do not and should not have to endure painful deaths. We should be able to live with dying more successfully than we have done in recent years. In fact, medical knowledge about death has advanced to such an extent that even the definition and understanding of death has changed. I was interested to read a scientific article recently about Sam Parnia, author of a book called The Lazarus Effect, and the work he has done showing that people can be brought back to life up to 8 hours after their hearts have stopped beating. Obviously, the right people and equipment have to be there to enable this to happen. Death does matter, and the manner of our dying, but life matters more, and how we live our lives can affect our dying.
Now we move to letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by Noel. Thank you, Noel.
Yes, James Anderson writes about secondary issue. Sir, When Stephen Hugh Jones suggests that some climate change activists are buffoons in letters May 28th, he is actually describing renewables activists for whom climate change is a secondary issue. Essentially, the renewables campaign is a romantic vision of a mythical pre-industrial rural idyll, including the proposition of nil or negative economic growth. This was reflected in the recent hustings when the Green Party leader set out nil growth as a party aspiration. Elsewhere, the work of reference for renewables campaigners, the Zero Carbon Britain report, shows that the aim is for a greatly restricted lifestyle in which energy is both scarce and prohibitively expensive. More of the same was set out in the Chronicle in February by director of WINAC, Chris Holloway. It doesn't have to be this way. Indeed, a reading of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change reports reveals a different story entirely, and one that is at odds with the WINAC view. If the IPCC framework, renewables are a valuable contributor, but are not capable of solving the climate change problem in any sensible manner. Only one country, France, has successfully decarbonised its electricity supply and has done so using nuclear and hydroelectric power. The cheapest renewables solution, onshore wind and its extra measures for intermittency, would be at least twice as expensive and highly intrusive to the countryside. More to the point, no industrial country comes remotely close to a solution using renewables. And as Labour leadership hopeful Liz Kendall said, forget the ideology, it's what works that matters. We appear to have a political class who tell us what they think we want to hear rather than what we need to know, perhaps wisely if re-election is the only thing that matters to them. Consequently, a substantial portion of the electorate voted for an end to austerity and simultaneously for a renewables policy that will create austerity. It's not so much that some renewables activists are buffoons, but that they replace engineering and economic literacy with romanticism, all heart and no head, thus invoking the proverbial warning about good intentions being the road to ruin. James Anderson, Wright's Close, South Wanston.
And here T. Martin is writing about Be Accountable. Sir, I congratulate Councillor Stephen Godfrey on becoming leader of the City Council. He states that one of his main aims is to make the council, and presumably its officers, more accountable for their actions. Does he really mean this, or does he know that it will be a popular statement as he realises that we in the private sector are having to be more and more accountable for our actions, and we are annoyed that the council and its officers seem to be becoming less and less accountable? Councillor Godfrey will have his work cut out if he is going to change this culture. It will be made more difficult, in my opinion, as I have felt that city councillors find it easy to defend and reflect the council's position on many issues rather than the concerns of the communities that they represent. I saw very few stand up and applaud Councillor Gottlieb over his stance on the Silver Hill shambles. A good place to start would be to force Simon Eden, Chief Executive of the City Council, to reform his planning department and its associated agencies. The appalling reputation they suffer is, in my opinion, well justified. They are a perfect example of inconsistency, unaccountability, waste and bad management. Perhaps Councillor Godfrey will give us regular updates on his progress. And that was from T. Martin of Diva Close, Mitchell.
And now Nick Bell says, Sir, I found it very appropriate that the letters on May 21st from Aurora Eastwood, Housing Crisis, and Jonathan Greatrex, How It Works, were printed next to each other in your last issue in light of the first sentence of the latter. Some of the drivel people concoct and send into your letters page is astounding. Miss Eastwood clearly has no idea how the planning process works, and as a resident of South Wanston and not Kingsworthy, probably has no knowledge of local issues. Whilst everyone would accept that there is an urgent need for more housing, we cannot just simply construct properties wherever developers wish to put them. The result would be chaos, environmental damage, not to mention the reduction in quality of life for local residents. There are reasons for the planning rejection, which she simply ignores by using the very subjective description of reasonable. The application was far from reasonable, as the level of housing required for Kingsworthy over the next few years under the local plan has already been achieved with the development at Loveton Lane, which was the site chosen after proper democratic consultation. Indeed, 75% of local Kingsworthy residents voted against making this site a rural exception site. Moreover, issues of public open space provision, utilities, drainage, and serious traffic congestion were not addressed by the developers in their application. So come on, Miss Eastwood, please get your facts straight before you make swinging accusations with no foundation, and consider how you would feel if developers bought up large area of land in South Wanston and were just allowed to build anywhere to solve the housing crisis. There are many other, more appropriate solutions and areas for building new houses. Nick Bell, Springvale Road, Kingsworthy.
John Lidston says, "Who dares wins?" Sir, in 1985 I was invited to sit in on a 1 week's officer selection for the SAS at Hereford. Most of what I heard and observed I cannot relate, but I do remember that prior to attending this selection week, each officer candidate had to undertake the Brecon Beacons hike, carrying on his body 60 pounds of army equipment. Of the 16 officer candidates who undertook this particular hike, only 12 made it to Hereford. One was disqualified because he stopped to help a fellow officer who had fallen and broken his ankle. Understandably, to meet the standards demanded by the SAS, the training is rigorous. Of the 800 who want to serve on secondment to the SAS, only one or two qualify. Of the 12 officer candidates in that week's selection I attended, only two qualified. This does not excuse the tragedies recently reported, but underlines the extremes to which serving SAS soldiers are exposed and must therefore be trained to survive and serve. John Lidston, Sutton Manor, Sutton Scotney.
And this letter starts with a copy of a poster showing very large lorries battling round a small corner in Alresford and saying on it, "Trucked off, councils will do nothing." And the letter is headed, "Let's tell them we are trucked off." Sir, we may be vandals, but this comment, arising from an incident when four youths pulled down a large poster from above my window, they also pulled down three others, was made in defence of their actions. These posters were intended to draw attention to the 2,000 petitioners protesting against the mega lorries thundering down Broad Street in Alresford. My sympathies are with those living perilously close to the dangerous bend leading down to the Globe, not forgetting the damage to the Norman Bridge. But when I explained to the least inebriated of these youths that we felt the lorries should be smaller, he replied that this would double the cost and that could affect maybe 1,000 jobs, and I had to agree that there are always two sides to every question. I should be interested to hear suggestions from other affected parties as to what actions we as residents can do to make the council see our side. And that was from Anna Marie Shaltima, Broad Street, Alresford.
And this one, headed "Make an Effort," is from Keith Story. Sir, the recently introduced 20-mile-an-hour speed limit for motorists in much of Winchester is supposedly for the increased safety of cyclists and pedestrians. However, every day I see adults cycling on footpaths, endangering pedestrians. I've even seen them cycling on the pavement past policemen. As for pedestrians, they still cross roads without looking. Shouldn't everyone, not just motorists, make an effort to improve safety? I ask the question because I have been run down by a bicycle on the pavement, and only a fast ambulance and immediate treatment in the operating theatre saved my life. I also ask the question because, as a motorist in Winchester, I have twice had a pedestrian encounter my car bonnet by suddenly stepping off the pavement without looking. Fortunately, I have good brakes and quick responses, but it was very scary for me and the pedestrians. Keith Story, St Cross Road, Winchester.
Jeff Bruty writes about representation. Sir, the names of the new Winchester Cabinet have been announced. Of the seven members, there is not a single representative of the six wards that make up the town. Councillor James Burns represents Littleton and Hairstock, but the remainder are from Wanston and Mitchell Deaver, Bishops Waltham, Swanmore, Two, Sparsholt and Denmead. As with previous administrations, one wonders whether a cabinet of this composition is likely to serve the best interests of the 37% of the district population who live within the town boundaries. Jeff Bruty, Manningford Close, Winchester.
And this is from Laura Parry and is about a headache study. Sir, researchers at the University of Southampton are inviting individuals to participate in a study examining how chronic headache affects cognitive processes, including attention and interpretation of written information. Individuals aged between 18 and 60 and who experience chronic headache are invited to take part in this study. Participants will complete two simple computer tasks, followed by some questionnaires assessing emotional functioning and pain characteristics. The study involves attending one session at the Pain Research Laboratory at the University of Southampton, Academic Unit of Psychology. The experiment takes about 90 minutes to complete. If you are interested in participating or would like further information, please contact Laura Parry, MSc Health Psychology student, via email ljplg14@soton.ac.uk. That is ljplg14@soton.ac.uk, or telephone 07917298827. And that was from Laura Parry, MSc Health Psychology student, the University of Southampton.
And this one is from Joy Knowles, and it's headed Excellent Care. Sir, I have returned from an unexpected stay at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, and have to say that I was completely overwhelmed by the excellence of my care. There is a great feeling of teamwork amongst all those working there. Nothing is too much for the many different teams, and they are highly skilled, kind, and attentive. Even at the end of their very long shifts and obviously tired, they are still smiling and patient. Kemp Welsh Ward, in the Nightingale Wing, is bright, clean and airy, and I couldn't have wished for better treatment of what turned out to be quite a problem. In spite of the pain and discomfort, needles, wires and tubes, now all finished with, I was sorry to leave. God bless the RHCF and all who sail in her. Joy Knowles, Botley Road.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now looking back, we begin with the news 200 years ago. Thank you, Noel.
Yes, two items from 200 years ago, from June the 5th, 1815. Of course, we're in the middle of the Napoleonic, well, near the end of the Napoleonic Wars. Whilst Murat was experiencing the prowess of the Austrian army by land, the British were making him feel the power of their arms by sea. We announced on our first page the capture of the French frigate Melpomene, which had endeavoured to violate the blockade of Naples, whither she had been sent, it is supposed, to bring off Murat and his wife. Three more of our squadron, under Lord Exmouth, proceeded into the Bay of Naples and threatened to bombard the city, upon which Murat's wife sent off Prince Cariati to propose certain conditions. And the other item, by the arrival of a Flanders mail, we learn that the utmost activity prevails in every department of the Allied army, preparatory to the commencement of the ensuing campaign. On Sunday last, the Duke of Wellington and Prince Blücher, accompanied by the two princes of Orange, Lord Hill, and several distinguished generals of different nations, set out for Grammont. The British cavalry, which forms the advance of the Allied army, is said to be in admirable condition and a most formidable body of men.
And two items from 100 years ago, June the 5th, 1915. The mayoress of Winchester, Mrs. Edmeads, had a most gratifying response to the appeal she made for pocket handkerchiefs for use in the ambulance ship Asturias. The mayoress asked for 1,000, but no less than 4,500 were brought or sent to her during the day, Wednesday. The mayoress attended the Abbey House to receive the handkerchiefs and was helped by her daughter and one or two lady friends. A feature was that many of the handkerchiefs were gifts from people in humble circumstances, and this was especially pleasing to the mayoress, who had hoped it might be so. And secondly, the elementary school children of Winchester commemorated Empire Day on Wednesday by an afternoon gathering at the Guildhall. The actual date being on Whit Monday this year, the schools had broken up for the customary holiday and did not reassemble till this week. The organisation of a combined celebration, the chief feature being an address by a military officer, Captain Hoare of the 4th Hampshire Regiment, made it desirable that only scholars in Standard 4 and upwards should participate. Mr. H.F. Eleanor of Denmark School, who is the representative on the City Education Committee of the Winchester Teachers Association, cooperated on behalf of the committee.
And this one is from 50 years ago, dated June the 5th, 1965, and it's in two parts. A coordinated transport system throughout Britain, run as a social service, was the Labour government's aim, a junior minister said in Petersfield on Saturday. Speaking at the second political education meeting organised by the local Labour Party, the Right Honourable Stephen Swingler, Parliamentary Secretary to the Ministry of Transport, gave details of a five-point plan already underway for the improvement of the country's transport. In the first place, he said, they were pursuing as vigorously as possible schemes for technical modernisation, something that was long overdue. Secondly, the government were stopping major rail closures. And the second part is Winchester's premier walking event, the challenge of a 50-mile hike to Basingstoke and back, attracted over 80 entrants last weekend. 65 of them started their marathon shortly after 8 o'clock on Sunday morning, when they were seen off from the Guildhall by the mayor, Alderman C.H. Bones. Late in the evening, the 13 stalwarts who completed the course limped into the city with 12 months to recover before they attempted again. First man home was Richard Harvey, a library assistant from St. Cross Road, who also won the event last year. His time of 10 hours 2 minutes was substantially better than his last year's record.
And here's two items from 25 years ago, June the 8th, 1990. I think a lot of you remember this. Bomb threat around suspicious package. A bomb alert turned part of Winchester city centre into a no-go area last Friday. Police closed Parchment Street and evacuated homes and businesses after a postman spotted a suspicious package outside the Royal British Legion Club shortly after 9 a.m. Fearing another IRA attack on a soft military target, a 60-yard exclusion zone was set up around the building while a bomb disposal squad was called in. Examination showed that the small parcel was harmless. A police spokesman commented it was an elaborate hoax. And the second item, Winchester Magical Society celebrates its 10th anniversary this year. It was founded in 1980 by two members of the famous magic circle living in Winchester, Mr. Geoffrey Lamb and Mr. Jess Bell. Since then, it has grown steadily, and now there are over 20 members, including full-time professionals, semi-professionals, and interested amateurs. Many are members of the Magic Circle or the International Brotherhood of Magicians, some coming from considerable distances to attend the monthly meetings in Winchester. Among the Society's activities are regular annual children's shows at the Theatre Royal Winchester and the Plaza Romsey.
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Jane and will be followed by First Person, read by Noel. Thank you, Jane.
And the editorial comment hopes that station will bind community. On the surface, they are two unconnected stories, but both are concerned with gradual changes that reflect the way social cohesion is being threatened and which should worry everyone. The East Winchester Social Club on Cheswell Street is on the market due to falling membership. For decades, it has provided a place for people to go and relax. There are fewer such people in Winchester today, gradually replaced by middle-class incomers who tend not to frequent working men's clubs. So, after 90 years, it looks to have closed. But there is good news. Along comes Winchester Hospital Radio with a scheme to launch a new station that will help bind the community together. We wish it well.
Khalid Aziz writes, "Felled too early." I write a few hours after the announcement of the death of Charles Kennedy. Even allowing for the normal post-mortem hyperbole that accompanies the death of someone in the public eye, it's clear that he was well-liked and thought of with warmth and fondness. I don't recall meeting him, but I know many who have, and certainly the impression was of a decent fellow felled too early in the forest of life at the age of just 55. Ah, the forest of life. What a forest it was for Mr. Kennedy. Elected at the age of 23 to represent the romantically named Ross, Cromarty and Skye constituency, known to most only by the shipping forecast, he was an impossibly young MP, until a month ago when, ridiculously, a 20-year-old student was elevated to the green benches in the Scottish Nationalist landslide. That was also to pluck a key life force from the one-time political star. Losing his parliamentary seat was yet another cruel blow to a man who had, during the election campaign, also lost his father. Against such devastation, it's hard to imagine he was able to balance today's tragedies with yesterday's triumphs, such as becoming leader of the Liberal Democrats, increasing their vote to over 6 million, and their common seats to more than 50. Hard to imagine, particularly as he was also battling with his demons. Demons, what a euphemism. The man was an alcoholic. I don't say that with disparagement, simply that it seems curious that his former colleagues all managed to dance around what must have surely been a contributing factor to the poor man's death. Alcoholism is like cancer all around us. We all know someone who has been touched by drink, often with devastating results. But while society has moved on and now freely speaks about what used to be hushly toned the big C, we are still not able to speak freely about alcoholism. Perhaps it's because we seem to be winning the war on cancer. Only this week there is news of a startling and promising breakthrough using immunology to successfully treat hitherto difficult cancers. When it comes to alcohol, we focus on the after effects, such as drink driving, Saturday night city centre punch-ups, disorder, as the police prosaically put it, and the Saturday night trail of injured drunks into A&E. The hidden effects of alcohol are closer to home. the days lost to hangovers, the weight gain often contributing to obesity, and the mental and sometimes physical pain inflicted on families, I have personally witnessed good friends insensate, having passed out shortly after threatening their own children. Alcohol, while never cheaper, can often contribute to a sapping of meagre family financial resources. I asked an alcoholic friend if I could attend an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting with him in Winchester. I was struck by the social range of the AA attendees and the dawning realization that I recognize many of them from other Hampshire environments. AA say there is no cure for alcoholism. An alcoholic is always recovering. Keeping to their 12-step program is the key, and it seems to work for many. However laudable this is, like other addictions, we seem not to want to delve further. After all, alcoholism, like drug-taking, is self-inflicted, isn't it? If that's so, how come people who have been moderate drinkers all their lives suddenly turn in their late 50s into alcoholics? There are many definitions for the condition. My favourite is anyone who drinks more than their doctor. Choose your GP wisely and you can stay out of trouble for years. Realistically, we need more research into the causes of addiction. What about dipping into the excise duty income stream to fund such research? For alcoholics, it would be a version of the polluter pays, just as tobacco taxes fund cancer research.
Belgarum's alternative look at the news this week has four items. The first, headed, Councillor Seems to be a Little Hypocritical. Kim Gottlieb has run a popular campaign against the Silver Hill development, but Londoners are equally upset with his plans to build a tower on Chiswick Roundabout. Councillor Gottlieb, a property developer with London and Bath Estates, has faced criticism for the Octopus, a striking 50-metre-high office. The £120 million project has reportedly been replaced by plans for a far taller Gateway Tower. Its architects tell the Chronicle the plans are likely to change again, but won't release any images. The second is new name behind Silver Hill. Farewell then to Henderson Global Investors, though not in the way some campaigners would have hoped. The firm has sold its stake in TIAA Henderson Real Estate, the developer behind the £150 million Silver Hill scheme, to investment giant TIAACREE. Or is it F? F. That spells a slight name change which may confuse Hampshire Chronicle readers. The developers will now be known as TH Real Estate, reflecting the overall control of TIAACREF, a global firm handling £384 billion in assets. Residents, councillors and architects have long referred to the company as Henderson, something this newspaper has reflected. The Chronicle expects the moniker to live on at Guildhall meetings, but will endeavour to make the new name clear. Strangely, however, the H in TH will continue to stand for Henderson. A company spokesman tells Belgarum, "We've kept it in as Henderson forms part of our heritage." Readers who lean against the development may have other ideas for things that TH Real Estate ought to keep in the name of heritage. The third item is headed MP Attacked by Dog While Canvassing. Meon Valley MP George Hollingbury has reason to support the Royal Mail's Dog Awareness Week. He was bitten while delivering election leaflets. He suffered cuts to his hand when attacked by a dog through a letterbox while out campaigning. "Luckily, my injury, although quite bloody, was not serious and did not require stitches," says George. And finally, the item, Royal Coat of Arms is Misleading on Sweets. Having the Royal Coat of Arms on a product is supposed to symbolise the Queen's support for British industry. Belgarum spotted Bendix Bitter Mints, still sporting the By Appointment to Her Majesty the Queen, Manufacturer of Chocolates, Winchester. Bendix is owned by German firm Stork, does not make mince in Moorside Road, Winnell, since 2011, when it closed the factory with a loss of 80 jobs and moved production to Germany. Is it not about time that Bendix changed its boxes, as it could easily mislead? Now we come to announcements, starting with What's On, and here are several events in and around Winchester. Every Monday from 1:30 to 3 p.m. at the United Church in Jory Street, Winchester, there's Singing for Wellbeing. This is for people with some memory loss to meet and sing together. Further details are available at 01962 890995. That's 01962 890995. On Wednesday the 10th of June, there's a lunchtime recital at Romsey Abbey at 1 p.m. And at 7:30 p.m, there's a talk entitled The Growing and Showing of Fuchsias at the Winchester Club, Worthy Road, Winchester. Details about that event are on 01962 866 818. That's 01962 866 818. Also at 7:30 p.m. on the 10th of June at the Winchester Discovery Centre, three female crime writers have an event called Killer Girls Night In. This costs £5. And yet again at 7:30 p.m. on the 10th of June at Prior's Hall in Winchester Cathedral Close, there's an evening of Call My Bluff to raise money for the cathedral appeal. The cost is £10, including a glass of wine. On Thursday the 11th of June at Winchester Discovery Centre, there's a talk entitled Alice's Appetites, Eating and Drinking in Wonderland. This is at 7:30 p.m. and the cost is £5. On Saturday the 13th of June, at 7:30 p.m. in Romsey Abbey, the Bournemouth Bach Choir and Orchestra present an evening of Baroque splendour with works by Bach, Vivaldi and Lotti. Tickets are £12 to £18, and the box office is 01794 512 987. That's 01794 512 987. Also at 7:30 p.m. on the 13th of June, in the gardens of Wolvesey, the Bishop's Palace, Rain and Shine Theatre presents Shakespeare's The Tempest. Bring your own low-back chair and rug. Further details in the box office are on 0777 862 644. That's 0777 4862 664. On Monday the 15th of June at 6:30 p.m. at the Theatre Royal Winchester, Michael Frayn is in conversation. Further details in the box office are 01962 840-440. That's 01962-840-440. Finally, the exhibition With the Rifles to Waterloo continues at the Royal Green Jackets Museum at Peninsula Barracks until the 30th of September. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 5th of June at 4:54 a.m. and begins at 9:13 p.m. On Wednesday the 10th of June, it ends at 4:51 a.m. and begins at 9:18 a.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870370. That's 01962 870370. And now we continue with all items of general news, and the first item is read by Shirley. Thank you, Shirley.
This one is headed Bogus Callers Targeting OAPs. A Winchester grandmother is warning people to be vigilant after bogus callers tried to get her bank details. It comes amid a spate of fraudulent calls in the Winchester area, with as many as 100 recorded in 2 days. I'm sorry, 180 recorded in 2 days recently by Hampshire Police. Jean Jones, a retired legal secretary of Water Lane, said a man with a rough-sounding voice phoned her at around 8:20 p.m. on Sunday, April the 12th. "I wouldn't normally have answered the phone because I always check the caller," said the mother of three and grandmother of three. "But I was in the bedroom putting my granddaughter to bed and I thought it would be one of the family." The man pretended to be a Metropolitan Police officer from London and said her card had been copied. He told her that it had been blocked and they needed her details. The 83-year-old said she knew straight away that it was a con man and phoned 999 to report it. However, the caller had stayed on the line, so when Mrs. Jones thought she was speaking to an operator, it was in fact still the offender. When she told the man on the phone she thought it was a scam, the line went dead. Police have linked the incident to at least 12 others on the same evening. DC Alex Hall of Winchester CID said, "In actual fact, we know that these offenders made up to 180 calls to different Winchester residents over the course of 2 days. Not all of these calls were answered, but it shows the scale on which these people operate. If you think you have been targeted by fraudsters and have not yet reported it to the police, please call us." Mrs. Jones said, "They are despicable people. If I'd not been quite with it, it doesn't beat thinking about. I probably have been targeted because they think people in their 80s are going gaga. It's taking savings from people's working life. It must be terrible for those whose money has gone. How did they know my name?" DC Hall said, "It is likely that they're using online phone directories in which they can search age ranges as well as regions to select their elderly victims. I want to reiterate our advice from Hampshire Constabulary and ask that it is passed on to all potential elderly victims in our communities."
Application put in for 50 homes. A developer has applied to build 50 homes in Kingsworthy and expand green space, just weeks after a separate application for 33 properties nearby. HAB Housing, which was established by Grand Designs presenter Kevin MacLeod, wants to build 6 one-bedroom flats, 10 two-bedroom houses, 14 three-bedroom houses, 11 four-bedroom houses and 9 five-bedroom houses on land off Loveton Lane. The proposals also include an expansion to Eversley Park and edible planting in communal areas. It comes just weeks after another developer, Drew Smith, submitted its controversial application for 25 homes on land off Hookbit Farm Lane, known locally as Top Field, with 7 self-builds at Dildawn. The City Council's online planning portal said a decision is expected for the Drew Smith application on August the 4th, shortly followed by the HAB Housing decision on August the 21st.
Here we have students revamp pond area. Children from a village near Winchester have thanked the conservation students who helped revamp their school pond. The pond at Barton Stacey Primary School has undergone extensive work with the help of Sparshot College students to revitalise children's discovery of plants and insects. The conservation and wildlife management students drew up a plan after asking children what they wanted to see. Over 3 visits, they cut back overgrowth and trees, renovated decking and benches, created a new bark path, built planters for herbs and scented flowers, and put up bird boxes. The crowning feature is a bug hotel. Sue Evans, assistant head teacher, said, "The staff and children are so excited about this revitalised space, which will support learning in many curriculum areas. They can't wait to use it and look forward to welcoming the next group of Sparsholt students to our school. More Sparsholt students are expected to take part in the project in September. And this is accompanied by a photograph of a very joyous group of small children with their hands up waving thank you, and a group of students with them sitting around the bark area around their pond.
Forced marriage author shares story of escape. A survivor of forced marriage who went on to launch Britain's first helpline for victims of honour crime has shared her experiences with girls at a Winchester school. Award-winning campaigner Jasvinda Sangera spoke to sixth form pupils at St. Swithin's School about her escape from marriage and how she founded her international charity, Karma Nirvana. The group hosts a crisis line for victims of forced marriages and so-called honour crimes. And Miss Sangera has won numerous awards for her activism and best-selling memoirs. Staff said it was an eye-opening talk for most of the girls who were unaware of the serious issues involved. Miss Sangera, a CBE who has been praised by David Cameron for her contribution to women's rights, drew on her own experience, as well as other girls who have been murdered by relatives, to highlight struggles in Britain. Sixth form pupil Olivia Williams said, "Jasvinda's compelling talk left everyone questioning how we can help raise more awareness in schools across the country. Experiencing her passion and commitment to the charity left the audience more mindful of what can be achieved through passion and determination." Miss Sangera's first book, Shame, explains her own experiences, while Daughters of Shame explores the struggles of other victims in Britain.
Private GP Clinic. Winchester's first private GP practice will soon open in the city centre. The Walcott practice will offer same-day appointments within and outside standard working hours, with the consultations priced from £65. It comes after 66 health workers were made redundant at the Friarsgate offices earlier this year to make way for the now-on-hold £150 million Silver Hills scheme. Former doctor in the Australian Royal Flying Doctor Service, Nicholas Hillier, will lead the surgery in Southgate Street, which opens on June the 1st. Or which opened on June the 1st. He said doctors will be available within 48 hours, or on the same day where possible, to cater to those with busy lives. If needed, the Walcott practice can provide quick access to diagnostic tests, scans and health screening, followed by rapid referrals, he said. It's all designed around excellent client healthcare and client convenience. He will be joined by retired senior partner at Bishop's Waltham Surgery, Stephen Hillier.
And here we have Steve Brine to work on health plan. Winchester and Chandler's for MP Steve Brine has been named as an aide to one of the country's most prominent ministers. Mr. Brine, 41, has been appointed Parliamentary Private Secretary, PPS, to the Health Secretary, Jeremy Hunt. It will be seen as a promotion for Mr. Brine, previously PPS to Police Minister Mike Penning. Mr. Brine will act as Mr. Hunt's eyes and ears in the House of Commons, gauging backbench opinion on the government's health agenda. It is said to be controversial in the Winchester constituency, with plans crystallising for a new critical treatment centre at North Waltham, near Basingstoke, sparking fears about the downgrading of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. He also served as PPS to Mr. Penning when he was Minister for Disabled People, later following him to the Home Office and the Ministry of Justice. Mr. Brine has previously expressed interest in continuing his work to cut reoffending rates at the MOJ. He has been MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford since 2010, when he took the seat vacated by Liberal Democrat Mark Oughton. At May the 7th election, he increased his majority, beating the Lib Dems' Jackie Porter by 16,914 votes. Announcing his appointment on Sunday on Twitter, Mr. Brown said, "Pleased to say I will be moving to the Department of Health as PPS to the Secretary of State, Jeremy Hunt."
And this is headed, "More homes to be built in busy street." Winchester planners have given a developer permission to demolish a house and build several others in a street that has seen numerous similar applications granted in recent years. The Council Planning Committee unanimously approved David Freeborn's plan for 2 5-bedroom houses and a block of 2 flats in Chilbolton Avenue. There is currently one large house with an extensive garden on site. It comes after similar applications were granted in February this year, 6, and July and November 2013, 4 each. In February, the committee was warned that residents are losing their privacy to overbearing and increasingly intrusive development. Neighbours Sue and Antonios Antonionu, worried their property would be overlooked, pleaded with councillors to reject the plans. Councillor Lucille Thompson echoed their concerns. She said, "Should this be approved, it will have a lasting impact on the enjoyment of their property. This part of the avenue is characterised by detached houses. It's because of the large amount of space between the plots that glimpses of the golf course and countryside can be seen from the road." Mr. and Mrs. Antonio and Councillor Thompson requested a planning condition which would stop Mr. Freeborn from building balconies or verandas on any of the 3 new buildings. The committee last Thursday also heard from Dan Wilden of Pure Town Planning on behalf of Mr. Freeborn. He said, "Mr. Freeborn is a local developer with a passion for high-quality design that he can be proud of. I consider this a high-quality local scheme that is fitting in this location."
Here's a nice positive story. Dementia help from insurers. One of Winchester's largest employers helped to raise support for people living with dementia by encouraging staff to become dementia friends. Last week, Denplan joined the Alzheimer's Society's National Friends Initiative, which seeks to challenge perceptions of the condition. The dental insurer trained 8 employees to become dementia friends champions, who could spread information on dementia to other staff. 7 of them are sales trainers for the firm and are helping other practices across Britain to become more dementia friendly. It came as part of Dementia Awareness Week, which ran from May the 17th to the 23rd. Steve Gates, managing director, said, "We're delighted to join the millions of people actively supporting the Dementia Friends Initiative. With people living longer, dementia is becoming increasingly common, so it's important that both individuals and organisations have a good understanding of dementia to support future generations." And this is accompanied by a lovely picture of 3 young employees of Denplan: Steve Willoughby, Lil Nidri and Natalie Dixie. And Lil Nidri in the middle is holding a placard saying, "We are dementia friends." It's really attractive, that is.
And now Leek was like a horror film. It was like a scene from a horror film. That was what one villager said after a gas leak left one man hospitalised and forced more than 20 people, including residents of a centre for ex-offenders, to be evacuated from their homes. Firefighters rushed to the centre of Otterbourne after reports of a leak at around 10:20 p.m. on Tuesday. Residents said there was a loud bang and they could hear what sounded like a jet taking off, before firefighters knocked on their doors around 10:30 p.m. and told them to evacuate. A spokesman for South Central Ambulance Service said one man, an SGN worker, was treated at the scene and taken to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital with minor head and facial injuries. Villagers were asked to go to the White Horse Pub on Main Road, which stayed open especially. However, firefighters later said they needed to move to Sparrow Grove, half a mile away. One of the evacuees, retired policeman Paul Rodford, 58, of Main Road, said he could see a 10-foot geyser coming from the ground at the junction of Kiln Lane and Main Road. It was like something from you could see in a horror film, he said. We were left in the middle of the road for 2 hours. We were then told to go back to our houses by the gas people, and then when we got there, a fireman told us we couldn't. We went to the village hall and waited. The gas was eventually capped off at about 4:15 a.m.
Paying respect to soldiers, they laid wreaths and fell silent to remember their forefathers' sacrifices. About 500 retired Gurkhas and Nepalese families from across the south visited Hampshire to pay respect to the soldiers who died fighting for the British since 1815. But the annual outing, starting in Winchester, carried extra meaning because it fell on the 200th anniversary year of Gurkha service to Britain and comes just weeks after devastating earthquakes struck Nepal. Crowds, complete in uniform or national dress, were joined by 10 firefighters who dispatched to the ravaged capital city, Kathmandu, to deliver aid and help the victims. Kamal Purja, co-founder of Hampshire charity Nepalese Help, said, "They have done so much for Nepal in the recent earthquake. They went out to the Gurkhas and helped many, many people. We are giving thanks to what they have done for us back in Nepal." The ex-Gurkhas and Nepalese relatives started the day by visiting the Gurkha Museum at Peninsula Barracks, many for the first time. Councillor Roy Perry, leader of Hampshire County Council, presented an award of £20,000 to the Gurkha Welfare Trust on behalf of the County Council and the people of Hampshire. And accompanying this, there are some lovely coloured photographs of these people. They're nearly all actually the Gurkhas, Nepalese people, many in their national costumes.
I've got a sequence of stories about young people, which is nice. And the first one is schoolgirls get excited about technology at two-day IT event. Winchester schoolgirls have been among those learning about technology as part of Development Laboratory's event. Year 8 girls from 16 Hampshire schools this week attended HackThePlanetThink.IT event at IBM in Hursley, which aimed to get girls excited about science. King's School pupils attended, as did a group from Thorndon School in Chandler's Ford. The day wants to see more girls continue studies in science, technology, maths, engineering and IT by offering the chance to see what working for an organisation like IBM entails. The girls were divided into mixed groups and had to invent a new product that solved a problem, work on its design, marketing and eventually present it. They used coding programs, learned about software development and took part in a murder mystery activity to strengthen relationships with their teammates. The event culminated with each team pitching their product at the Think IT Expo, where they sold their ideas to IBM members. And there's a picture of one team of girls, of King's and Thorndon pupils at IBM, all gathered round a laptop computer, or a computer of some sort anyway, I don't know what it is. And the picture is captioned Girl Power, which is great.
And now, police base set to shut in 2015. Winchester's police base is set to close by the end of the year when staff relocate to a former council block. The closure of North Wall Station, revealed by the Chronicle last year, is expected between October and December, according to District Commander Darius Hemakpour. The base is currently operational and open to the public, but will close after local neighbourhood officers move to a new headquarters at Mottisfont Court, the former County Council building in Upper High Street. A neighbourhood police office with public access is set to open in Winchester High Street by Christmas. North Walls is temporarily housing Hampshire investigators looking into Winchester crimes, as well as staff evaluating the city's licensed premises. Mr. Hemakpour said, It's the licensing team who look at licensed premises associated with the nighttime economy. They have responsibility for a number of districts, including Winchester. Also, some of our investigators who have local crimes to investigate, they are here temporarily. Emergency response officers have already moved to the fire station in Winnall Manor Road, while Winchester's beat areas, the city centre and an outer band of suburbs, merged in April. Our response teams recently moved to Winnall Fire Station and are permanently based there, although that is not a public access building, Mr. Hemmetpour added. We are expecting to vacate North Walls sometime between October and December this year. Dozens of job cuts to frontline and backroom staff are set to follow in Winchester, although no posts will be lost as a direct result of relocation. The city will lose two police constables who will be replaced by two PCSOs. The future of the building is unclear, but it is thought to be a lucrative site for housing or expansion by the School of Art. The changes come as part of a multi-million pound government cuts to Hampshire Constabulary, which is reducing its estates hill to minimise job losses.
Share views on revamping city. Winchester civic chiefs say a public consultation over the station approach redevelopment will be one of the most detailed ever undertaken. The City Council wants to see a revamp of a huge swathe of the city centre, from Gladstone Street, past the train station and on into Andover Road to the Cattle Market car park. In scale, it could dwarf in value the £150 million Silver Hill scheme. Although proposals are at an early stage, opposition is growing, with concerns over station approach cited as one of the motivations for the 1,000 protester march through Winchester last November. The City Council says the consultation will include coverage in the press and online, printed leaflets delivered to local homes and at the railway station, face-to-face meetings with residents and interest groups, and an online survey. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, council leader, said the consultation for station approach was at an earlier stage in the process, more detailed and more comprehensive than any we have done before. We have received many hundreds of individual and collective responses, and all of these are being considered. We have even received a critique of our summary of the responses. I take this as a positive sign of the level to which people are engaged in this consultation. I would ask only that everyone takes a realistic view. With so many responses, we must group them in practical ways so they can influence the decision-making process. We are aware of the strength of feeling on a number of issues. Comments have been received on many issues, including design, walking and cycling, parking, retail and commercial, traffic and flow, public art and culture, housing, public transport, environment, the registry office and conservative club, the station and its approach, a Roman burial site, the need for modern, flexible office space for business users, and the NHS and some miscellaneous matters. And with this article, there's a very nice colour picture of the people on that march last November with all their placards showing their wishes. Winchester deserves better. Heritage, not Henderson. Council, change your ways.
And this is achievements in sports. Hundreds of athletes at a Winchester sixth form celebrated the season's achievements at a campus awards night. Peter Simmons College's 24 teams met for the sports awards ceremony with guest speech from former Southampton star Francis Benali. There were 300 students packed into the Mercer Sports Hall, but basketball player Chris Amedou was the star of the show, scooping four awards, including the Mike Conlon Memorial Sporting Scholarship. He also picked up the Team Manager's Player of the Year for men's basketball, Volunteer of the Year and Sportsman of the Year, voted by his peers. Hockey player Laura Johnson won Sportswoman of the Year, while her squad was crowned Team of the Year. Event organiser Sam Ball said, "The Peter Simmons Sports Awards evening recognises the wide range of sporting talents. This event allows the coaches and players to recognise achievements which have been accomplished whilst the students have been applying themselves to their academic studies." And the photographer has chosen to picture the Simmons hockey team Team of the Year, which just happens to be 20 extremely attractive young women dressed as, and posed as glamorously as possible.
And now local links to Magna Carta. A lecture in memory of a former county councillor will mark the 800th anniversary of the Magna Carta. Local links to the historic document will be the topic of this year's Dudley Keep Memorial Lecture in Winchester's Great Hall on June the 10th. The Magna Carta outlined basic human rights with the principle that no one is above the law, including the King. County Council Chairman Jonathan Glenn will welcome attendees before Dr. Nicholas Kahn from the University of Southampton delivers the lecture. Councillor Glenn said, "This year's lecture takes place exactly 800 years since King John left his castle at Odiham on June the 10th, 1215, the ruins of which are now looked after by the council. King John then headed for Windsor to consider the 48 articles in the Articles of the Barons, which were drawn up in an attempt to avert civil war and form the basis for the Magna Carta. Following 5 days of negotiations, the articles were agreed by King John at Runnymede in Surrey on June the 15th. And for tickets for this, email anneil@hants.gov.uk. That is anneil@hants.gov.uk.
Downton Star tells the tale. The star of TV hit Downton Abbey and blockbuster Paddington has narrated a charity appeal telling the story of a Hampshire girl who lost her life at the age of just 2. Hugh Bonneville narrates the Naomi House and Jack's Place hospice film about Lacey Leggett, who died last year from a rare medical condition. Lacey had an extremely rare condition called mitochondrial TK2 cell depletion, which her parents Lisa and Dominic did not discover until she was 6 months old. She spent her first birthday, Christmas and New Year in hospital, and she eventually lost the ability to move, talk and eat. The illness is extremely hard to spot, and it took months for doctors to diagnose it. She was then supported for the rest of her short life by Naomi House in Sutton Scotney, which also helped her parents after she died on Valentine's Day of 2014. Bonneville was approached by the charity to narrate a story about her life. The film has been released on video website YouTube to coincide with Children's Hospice Week. Naomi House and Jack's Place spokesman Keith Wilson said, "Lisa and Dominic's courage has enabled us to really show people what Naomi House is all about and to give people an insight into why our service makes such an enormous difference to families with life-limited and life-threatened children. We are indebted to them for sharing Lacey's moving story and giving many thousands of people a better understanding of our work. We must also thank Hugh Bonneville for the wonderful support he has shown."
And another story about young people: youths take on police in football match. A Winchester youth charity took on police and shop workers in a mini football tournament to celebrate a £3,000 grant from the Police and Crime Commissioner. players from Street Reach's Friday Football Project challenged Hampshire Constabulary and Sainsbury's Winchester to a game after a year as the shop's charity partner. The Football Project has received £2,920 from Commissioner Simon Hayes to help disadvantaged youngsters in Winchester play sport, make friends, build confidence and stay off the streets. Ben Martin, Street Reach's project manager, said, "Street Reach is very grateful for this support, as the Friday Football Project does not receive any specific funding. We are really pleased that the project is well attended." And this is accompanied by a lovely picture of all the teams, the police and the young people and the shop workers all gathered together, posing in front of a very wide goalpost.
And here we have school children help find country's top dinner lady. Firecracker curry, lime and coconut loaf and cauliflower rice are not your average school dinners. But these were the dishes served up to South Wanston school children as they judged a competition to find Britain's best dinner lady. Year 6 pupils, Maya Fernando and Simon Kamek, were chosen to test taste meals for the Lacquer School Chef of the Year contest in Worthy Down. 10 school chefs, including two men, battled it out to provide the best two-course meal for children aged 3 to 11. With no Hampshire representation in the kitchen, the crown went to Kate Davies from South Wales. Her firecracker, chicken curry platter and mango, lassie-style yoghurt was enough to win over the youngsters, who joined industry experts and dietitians to judge the dishes. Organisers said, "Maya Fernando and Simon Kamek were the pupil judges and performed their role to perfection with a keen interest and contribution to the judging process." The competition, organised by the local authorities' Caterers Association, is designed to promote high cooking standards in schools and encourage healthy eating for children. And there is a picture of the 6 South Wanston children looking very discerning but also very happy in the large kitchen which was preparing their delicious school lunches.
Ladies set for charity race. A wave of pink is set to race through Winchester as a charity fun run returns this Sunday. Race for Life, organised by Cancer Research UK, will see 1,500 women take to the city's garrison ground and university stadium. The charity encourages women and girls of all shapes, sizes and abilities to run, walk, jog or even dance the 5-kilometre course. Last year, 8,867 women in Winchester and Southampton raised £469,697 and organisers are hoping to smash that this time around. Chris Woods, Area Events Manager for Cancer Research UK, said the charity is aiming to raise £100,000 from the Winchester event. He said, "Race for Life is non-competitive. It's not about being fit or fast. Most women are able to walk 5 kilometres in an hour while chatting and having fun. We know that Hampshire ladies are up for the challenge." He added, "Personally, I'm really looking forward to the event. The atmosphere on the day is absolutely amazing, and reading through everyone's back signs with their reasons for taking part is so humbling. Race for Life is so important. Every hour, more than 5 people are diagnosed with cancer in the southeast. But the good news is that research supported by Race for Life events is helping more people survive than ever before."
This is my favourite story of the week. Teddy bears do charity stunts. Winchester Cathedral has seen much in its 900 years of history, but never anything quite like this. These were the moments brave teddy bears took the plunge from its walls to raise money for a children's charity. More than 65 bears were signed up for the Action for Children parachute jump from the south nave roof of Winchester Cathedral last Friday. There were squeals of delight as each bear, attached to a brightly coloured parachute, was announced on the megaphone and thrown from the medieval church before cruising, sometimes smashing, to the ground. Organisers had mini stretchers on hand to make sure bears were safe and well before being returned to their owners to receive a medal and certificate. Not only teddy bears, Tallulah, the naked one-armed doll, hurtled to the ground before owner Jake, and there's a picture of him here, too, scooped her up. She's not quite naked, she's got a onesie on, I think. His mother, Laura Nation, said, "It's brilliant and lovely because Jake was christened here, so it was nice for him to do something supporting children at an event the children enjoy." Six-year-old Natalie Vinnell watched as her bear Orange successfully completed the challenge. She said, "It was okay and lots of fun." And there's a picture of Orange being hurtled off the cathedral in his parachute, and then another picture of Orange with Natalie Vinnell, age six, holding him in her arms. The charity has 47 children's centres across Hampshire. In Winchester, it has Sparklers in Winnall Community Centre, the Carroll Children's Centre in Stanmore, and Rain and Shine at Kingsworthy Primary School. Simon Barwood, spokesman for the cathedral, said, "It's a wonderful thing to be able to help children to support people in the community," he said. The event managed to raise £961. Brilliant.
And now 45 new homes plan rejected. Plans for 45 new homes have been rejected amid fears it would damage a green gap north of Winchester. The Welch family's outline proposal included 40% affordable housing, 8 self-builds, public open space and a barn which would be converted for community use on land off Hairstock Road. But councillors on the planning committee warned that building there would herald an end to the countryside surrounding Littleton and join it with Hairstock. Steve Opasek, head of strategic planning at Winchester City Council, said the council is in the process of delivering homes through local plans 1 and 2, so should avoid ad hoc development. The council has to demonstrate that it can provide 5 years of housing band, he said. Should this come to an appeal, I am confident that we can demonstrate that. I am confident that we have a robust supply of housing. There was much debate at the committee last Thursday about lack of open space in Hairstock and need for a community facility. The meeting heard from Open Space Officer Stuart Dunbar-Dempsey, who said Hairstock has a shortfall of public green space. Representing Littleton and Hairstock Parish Council, Patrick Cunningham objected the proposal, as did Councillor James Burns, who branded the community centre a white elephant and newly elected Councillor Paul Twelvetree. He said out of the near 300 letters either supporting or objecting the ideas, only 131 came from within the parish, with others coming from afar away as Epsom and Twickenham supporting it.
Food Festival's 15th birthday. A county-wide festival showcasing local food and drink is celebrating its 15th year. Originally a weekend event, the Hampshire Food Festival has grown into a month-long countrywide programme. Last year, it won gold for Tourism Event of the Year at the Beautiful South Awards. Tracy Nash, Commercial Manager of Hampshire Fair, said, "We're all really excited to be celebrating the 15th anniversary. There really is something for everyone." The event, from July 1st to August 2nd, has events in Sparsholt, Winchester, Stockbridge, Alresford, Otterbourne and others.
Citizens Advice appoint a new top boss. Winchester District Citizens Advice Bureau has appointed a new chief officer. Natalie Webb has succeeded Jenny Meadows, who stood down last December after merging the CABs in Winchester and Bishop's Waltham. Ms. Webb, 32, previously worked for East Hampshire CAB and in local government and has been an active volunteer with charities including MenCap and Pets as Therapy. Ms. Webb said she is constantly driven to make a difference to real people and communities and is very much looking forward to joining the team at Winchester District CAB. Andrew Beadle, chairman of the CAB based in St George's Street, said, "We are delighted to have Natalie join us to lead our experienced team."
And that concludes our extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles and Irene Dowding. Thank you to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thank you to our readers, Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye, and do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet, and when you put the label inside the wallet, please ensure the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside. Thank you.